The Education Gadfly Show starts now. This is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, always impervious to heat waves, Rick Hess.
Man, it is hotter than a dog out there, is it not?
It is hot out here in Washington, D.C., but you know where it's nice and cool?
Where's that, baby?
Aspen, Colorado.
It was indeed.
Rick and I had very tough duty last weekend, working very hard at a conference in Aspen, Colorado. Now, Rick, I understand, you know, let's admit we had some free time while we were out there.
We did, and I heard you took it as an advantage to go pick up a little bit of Ghirardelli, huh?
Ghirardelli. That, I believe, is a deli or a chocolate. I'm not sure. I think I might have contracted Giardia, though. let me explain for listeners.
Is that a sexually transmitted disease here, Rick?
No, it is certainly not. See, Rick, what happened was I went on a big hike, and this was supposed to be like a three-hour hike. My wife and I headed out, and lo and behold, 6.5 hours later, we found ourselves hitchhiking down the mountain. The nice lady at the hotel desk who told us it was a three-hour hike must be some sort of Olympic athlete. It was a long hike. And we ran out of water halfway through, and I was getting some heat stroke and was a little delirious. Lo and behold, we jumped in a river, and I drank a whole bunch of the water.
All right, well, that sounds innocent enough. When you started talking about the gal behind the counter, I thought she was the one who was getting injured.
Okay. No, but, you know, I understand that you had had made some poor decisions in Aspen as well. Is it true that you caught speeding into Aspen?
I was, but I got to say, this was one of those innocent kind of caught speeding type deals where flying to Denver, as you know, of all things, the control tower in Aspen gets hit by lightning. I mean, where does this kind of stuff happen? So I had to rent the car, this little, like, dinky PT Cruiser thing. It's, you know, I'm rolling into Aspen at, like, 1 in the morning. And, you know, you lose track. You're trying to make sure you leave no trail behind.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But the cop was cool about it. She understood. She, you know, you gotta love the folks in uniform.
Okay. So lessons for our listeners out there. Number one, don't drink the water. Number two, don't get caught speeding. And number three, never rent a PT Cruiser. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair point.
All right. Well, you know, Rick, I suspect we may have some new listeners out there today. Because, you know, there is really no education news and views available except for the education podcast this week. After all, I mean, think about it. The Education Gadfly show, I mean, the Education Gadfly print edition is not running this week. EduWonk is on vacation.
Ooh.
All right, so we are the only game in town.
Wow.
So if you're a new listener, welcome, welcome. Let me tell you how this works. We are going to start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly, where we debate three topics for 90 seconds each. Then we're going to have an interview today with Jackie Delamatre of the Guggenheim Museum in New York, who's going to illuminate the connection between pointillism and phonics.
Well, that's some nice writing right there.
Isn't that nice? Very good. And finally, our weird correspondent, Liam, will serve up a dose of education news of the weird. All sound good?
It works for me, baby.
All right. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Topic number one. Looks like the new New Orleans public school system is going to be virtually all charter schools. Now, this is exactly what the charter school folks have always dreamed about. Right, Rick? What does this mean?
It's actually not at all what the charter school folks have always dreamed about. You know, the opportunity to move into a town that's kind of on the ropes, which has none of the infrastructure in place, with cruddy facilities, with a lack of back office support, is not what we ever expected to really offer an opportunity for a thriving charter sector. The whole idea is to let people go in and run effective schools that attract excellent teachers and do great work in a supportive environment. So, I mean, this is more than a little bit of bear trap written all over it. Charter folks have a real risk of going in, and if they're not careful on the front end, of getting stuck in the tar pit.
All right, and yet this is also a great opportunity. You know, in Aspen, the president of the Aspen Institute, Walter Isaacson, spoke to our group, which was a group convened by the New Schools Venture Fund. There's a lot of talk about New Orleans, the opportunities there. He really dared the people in that room to get involved. This was our opportunity of a generation to do some good. And he said that, and he is from New Orleans. He was then the head of CNN and Time Magazine. But he is from New Orleans. He co-chairs the commission that's trying to rebuild the city. And what he said is, we are 100% committed to charter schools in New Orleans.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right. I mean, there's a possibility here. But being committed to charter schools can mean a whole bunch of different things.
Oh, buzzed out of
time.
What
the heck was that?
That was, I think, like a gadfly buzzing.
Oh, that's very cute.
very good. All right. What's topic two?
That was dreadfully serious, Mike. I'm digging it. All right. Topic two. Last week, the U.S. Education Department announced the expansion of two pilot programs that allow school districts to offer supplemental services a year earlier than usual and to serve as tutoring providers, even if they themselves have been deemed poor performers. Mike, as a guy who used to be one of the top officials in the Office of Innovation and Improvement, is this increased flexibility a good thing?
You know, this increased flexibility is a great thing if you run a big, lousy urban school system that's been failing for years and years, and now you get the opportunity to provide free tutoring to kids, even though you've proven that you can't do a very good job during the school day. Rick, this is not a very good thing. I mean, there's two pieces to this. First, it allows more districts to provide the tutoring before the public school choice, which is great, but the truth is, in most districts, schools have already been labeled in need of improvement for enough years that they're into the tutoring requirements already. So it doesn't gain us a whole lot. It basically takes pressure off these districts from implementing the school choice provisions very well. This other piece says that failing districts now, more of them, can provide tutoring to their students instead of outsourcing it to private providers. Again, I don't see any benefit here, especially when we've got the fox guarding the hen house. You know, all this does really is make people like Mike Casherly at the Council of Great City Schools happy.
You're picking on Mike?
Look, I like Mike. I like him a lot. This is something, though, that he cares about. And this isn't necessarily good for poor kids. I mean, we know that these districts have not been playing fair. They have not been allowing the private providers to have a fair share. This is not a good thing.
Wow. Was that 90 seconds right there?
I think that, you know, our producer, Jen, and our News of the Weird correspondent, Liam, really haven't been big fans of our debates today.
I think they're trying to tighten us down, man. So you're really down
nerd
with
alert.
These ones, Mike, or are you more okay with one than the other?
Did that say nerd alert?
Nerd alert!
I think it's him.
Wow.
Who was that referring to?
Definitely you, Rick. Definitely you.
Man.
You rented the PT Cruiser.
Oh, that's hurting, baby.
All right, Rick, our final topic here this week, the Aloha State, Hawaii. First of all, is it true that after 10 days in Ocean City, Maryland, a weekend in Aspen, you are now going to go spend 2 weeks in Hawaii?
Dude, a man needs to replenish and refresh.
I mean, the rest of us are working hard getting ready for back to school. You're heading off to the Aloha State.
I believe in recharging the batteries, baby.
Okay, very nice. All right, well, while you're there, you can check this out, because Hawaii has decided to use weighted student funding. That is, to tie education dollars directly to students and to allow more dollars for students who need more help in the classroom. Now, as we've said before, we generally think this is a good thing. But because of politics, the Hawaiian version of weighted student funding has become laden with compromises, and the state's charter schools aren't even participating. Rick, is there trouble in paradise?
Sure there is. Same reason that saying that folks in New Orleans like charters doesn't actually mean a whole lot, because saying the label charter schooling can kind of cover all manner of sins. Saying one is for weighted student funding doesn't really mean anything. What matters is what the weighted student funding system looks like, how the weights are determined, how much money's in the pot. Hawaii has kept a bunch of money out of the pot, still tied it to programmatic expenses, has limited principal's authority over the money that is getting spent, has done some funky things with the weights. At the end of the day, they can call it whatever they like. It's a pretty silly way to construct an expenditure system.
And, you know, it is a really bad sign that the charter schools aren't participating. A big point of this whole program is that the money would follow children into schools of choice like charter schools and give more authority to principals like they have within charter schools. The fact that they're not participating is definitely a sign of trouble.
That's right. I mean, and so I think that's one of the dangers with all these reforms is people grab onto the name, they grab onto the label, and they say, hey, good idea. But what really matters is not what people say they like charter school and the way it's being funded, but what they're actually doing.
Rick, you have been flushed. And that is it for Pardon the Gadfly.
Ooh.
Now we turn to our interview. And as I said before, this week we are chatting with Jackie Delamatre of the Guggenheim Museum. Let's take a listen. Hello, Jackie. Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Great. Well, we're talking about a new study released by the Guggenheim that examined the impact of its Learning Through Art program. So, Jackie, tell us a little bit about the findings.
Okay, great. Well, what we found as part of our study is that we improved 5 of the 6 critical thinking skills that we were looking at within the study. And that means that students, when they were looking at an artwork, were better at displaying the critical thinking skills of extended focus, hypothesizing, giving evidence for those hypotheses, making connections to their lives in the world, and recognizing that multiple interpretations of the artwork could be correct. And then when they looked at a text, a written text, they were able to improve, they showed that they improved their critical thinking skills in four of the six areas, and that was extended focus, thorough description, hypothesizing, and multiple interpretations, recognizing that they can be correct.
Okay, now that's very interesting. Now, to be clear, though, for our listeners, when the students were taking this test, so to speak, they were giving their answers out loud, right?
Right.
Okay, but then you also looked at whether those students did better on the city's English language arts test, and in fact, they did not do any better on that test. So why do you think that is?
Well, I think there is a very clear explanation for that, and that is that the ELA, the English Language Arts Test, actually tests whether students can both decode, can do the alphabetic decoding to do the reading that they need to do, as well as testing their reading comprehension slash critical thinking skills. Our study was very specifically designed to just measure the second part of those skills, those critical thinking skills, and the only way that we could do that was to take the reading part and the written part out of that, so that we are really just isolating those skills to see if they have improved that. And that's a way that you are able to tell whether students who are struggling readers are improving their critical thinking skills.
Okay. So when they're taking the written test, they might get hung up on some of those decoding issues and other reading skills. They don't have an opportunity to demonstrate that they have those higher order critical thinking skills.
That's right.
Okay. Now, Jackie, the premise of the study appears to be that arts education can only be justified if it leads to improvements in these kinds of critical thinking skills. But why not argue for art for art's sake?
Well, I actually am very much for art for art's sake, and it is a feature of our study that we made sure that we were measuring the impact that the arts have upon visual literacy, upon students' ability to talk about artwork, as well as the impact that our program has on literacy skills. So we very specifically talked about critical thinking skills, which are skills that run across looking at artwork as well as text. So they're both in there, actually, because we really do feel like improvements within the arts are just as important as those improvements within the curriculum.
Okay, very good. And, you know, this study really should have an important role in the debate over No Child Left Behind, over narrowing the curriculum. You know, that I understand that you're really hoping that educators out there see that there's a real benefit to arts education, again, for art's sake, but also for these critical thinking skills. And maybe that will help decision makers not cut arts programs out of the budget and out of the curriculum. All right, so one last question, Jackie. We noticed that you tested students on their ability to describe a painting. It was Arshil Gorky's The Artist and His Mother, which is a fairly straightforward piece. I have to admit, I just Googled it before the show and took a look at it myself, and very beautiful, pretty straightforward. What was that?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's in the Whitney's collection. It's beautiful if you're ever in New York to see it.
Yes, it is. So, but I have to wonder, what do you think would have happened had you asked these students to describe a Picasso or a Jackson Pollock?
Well, I actually think it would have been a very similar kind of finding. Our students actually really do look at very many abstract paintings as well as these more figurative paintings. We, in fact, might have seen more of a difference, I think, because our students are more familiar with that versus the control school students who didn't have our program. But we wanted it to be parallel questions with the text, which was about characters within a story. So we asked basically the same questions about the painting. What do you think is the relationship between these two people, for instance, as we did about the text excerpt?
Well, I have to admit, if somebody asked me the meaning of a Jackson Pollock painting, I would be hard-pressed to give a very good answer.
Well, you should be a part of our program.
I think maybe I should. That's right. Yeah. Me and the other, what, nine-year-olds, right? Good.
Uh-huh. I think you'd find that they can enlighten you a lot about what's in a painting. They're often far more willing to delve into the meaning of a Pollock than an adult is, actually.
Okay. Well, I may, you know, let me know when the program's up and running, and maybe I'll take a little field trip.
Great. You're welcome anytime.
Okay, Jackie. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, and I do hope that you'll return.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, Rick, pretty interesting, huh?
So, yeah, that's funky stuff.
Yeah, so who's your favorite painter?
I like that that Van Gogh cat with the real vivid colors. And like the ladies on the beaches, I always thought that was pretty sweet.
Are you thinking of the right guy? Is that him? The one who cut his ear off, right?
I think that's him. Actually, now here's a question for you, Mike, as a former kind of low-ranking federal official. If a guy cuts his ear...
Wait, go back to that. Low ranking. I mean, I think I at least had a higher status before on the show, didn't I? I was a functionary.
Functionary, that's right. But so if a guy's ear is cut off like that, especially if he cuts off his own ear,
right?
For purposes of NCLB, are you then labeled a, you know, in the special needs subgroup?
Well, that's a tough question. If you look at the department's regulatory guidance, I believe it's question 743.6, you will find out that if a child's ear has been cut off, if that does affect their listening to a certain degree, then yes, they can be considered special ed and therefore qualify to be in the NCLB subgroup.
Now, is that for real, or are you just goofing on our listeners?
Rick, I'll let you figure that one out. And it is now time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our specially weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Now, Liam, you have worn some strange outfits into the studio before, but what is with all the morbid black eye makeup?
Well, Mike, today I'm emulating my newest hero, the 1970s rock sensation, Alice Cooper, who has just established a $3 million youth center where youngsters can go to play sports, learn a musical instrument, and find Jesus. Cooper, born Vincent Fournier, is probably best known for his outrageous shock rock shows. During one concert, for example, Cooper threw a live chicken off stage and into the crowd. The wild fans, no doubt possessed by Cooper's insane guitar riffs and unconventionally angry vocals, tore the chicken to shreds.
Oh.
The incident was widely reported in all the major media outlets of the day.
Liam, could you sing just a few of those lyrics, just so we get a sense of what that was like?
But now, Cooper has settled down, and he wants to give something back. Talking about his motivation for opening the youth center, Cooper told the Arizona Republic, quote, "Even kids who grew up in gangs have a creative place in their body. They have a choice between a 9mm and a 9-iron," unquote. "If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. What the youth of America need today, more than ever, are community centers run by 1970s death metal rockers." Rick, were you an Alice Cooper fan? And would you go to his youth center?
I got a question here about this 9mm 9-iron thing. Now, I gotta say, I'm not sure it's any better to have kids wailing on people with 9-irons than blasting away at them with 9mm. I mean, I've never been shot, but I got hit once with like a 6-iron or a 7-iron, and that hurt like hell.
And, you know, Rick would know about this because he's a championship miniature golf player.
Yeah, baby.
And I know that when you play with your cousins, they often hit you over the head with their putters, don't they?
They do. They wail on me. Of course, Petrilli schooled me on the roof one time.
Well, this is true. Wow, this is very interesting. You know, Alice Cooper, I think we commented earlier on Meat Loaf as well as Meat Head. I mean, this is a real trend here.
We've actually referenced Alice Cooper before in the Education Gadfly print edition.
Is that right?
That's absolutely true.
Alice Cooper, one of the nation's premier education reformers.
Mike, now, one of the things I've noticed, do you notice how slow and NPR-ish Liam has become?
I did notice that. I mean, what do you think, how do you explain that?
I don't know. It's like those pretentious things that I can't, I'm like, spit it out already. Liam used to be a fast talker on this thing.
Right.
And now he's like, 9mm? Or... a 9-iron.
And the strange thing is, he was doing that all the while he was shredding a chicken to pieces. So,
loving it.
Very, very good. Well, all right. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed the show. And if not, we're sorry we've wasted your 15 minutes. But don't worry, we'll be back in 2 more weeks. Rick is going on vacation, as we said before. Sarah Mead from Education Sector will be here to co-host the show. We hope that she'll join us. In the meantime, next week, read the Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net.
Till next week, I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.